Welcome to the Healing Trauma Podcast, a compassionate guide for those seeking to heal and thrive. Introducing your host, Monique Coven, a certified trauma recovery coach and fellow traveler on the path to healing. In this podcast, we will engage in heartfelt conversation with experts in the field of trauma healing. We'll explore ways to cultivate feeling safe in our bodies and in connection to others, so that we can be present to live the life we've been given more fully and with more joy. Join us as we navigate the way towards a life restored. Introducing your host, Monique Coven.
Welcome back to the podcast. It's been a while.
Yeah, it's so good to see you, Monique. It has been a while, and I'm really glad to see you.
Same here. I had you on talking about somatic experiencing and healing trauma, and it was a really popular episode. How I met you was in somatic experiencing, and you were the instructor, and I was like blown away with just the way that you teach. I knew I had to have you on. And now you are incorporating somatic experiencing with another very interesting focus. Speaking of focus, is focusing. And I thought maybe you could tell the audience a little bit about that.
Absolutely. And so, as you know, I've been a somatic experiencing faculty member and instructor for about 10 years now. I love somatic work. I think it's so powerful. And the ability to connect with the experience in your nervous system is deeply healing. And I have a very deep interest in attachment, and really have been wanting to add something more attachment-focused to my SE work. I returned to focusing, to inner relationship focusing with Anne Weiser-Cornell and Barbara McGavin, and felt like I found what I'm looking for. I was looking for that deep relationship with what you encounter inside, with your experiences in your body, treating the experiences in your body like parts, a somatically based parts work model, but allows you to turn towards things and be with them very deeply, getting to know them from a place of being interested, curious, and compassionate, a self-relationship that has become very popular with parts work. What's different about inner relationship focusing is that you are always coming from the somatic, and you're building a relationship with what you are somatically experiencing. Inner relationship focusing and somatic experiencing share a lineage. They are both based on Eugene Genlin's work, and his work was all about what are you feeling inside as you are being with this. So like if you and I were talking about a relationship you had or a relationship I had, and I was talking about it, you might say to me, Maureen, even as you're talking about this relationship, what do you notice in your body or what are you sensing in your body? And that's our starting point. Our starting point is actually what we're experiencing in the body, just as it is in somatic experiencing. But now you're going to form a relationship with that. You're going to form a relationship with what you're experiencing inside.
So I'm hearing a little bit of internal family systems. Is it like internal family systems?
It's a lot like internal family systems, and it's very different from internal family systems in that both are parts work models. But in inner relationship focusing, the parts that you are being with are the somatic experiences, how you are experiencing your body. As you know, in somatic experiencing, we're often dealing with the way the body deals with stress and trauma through contractions and expansions and overwhelm. And how is your body responding? In inner relationship focusing, we are tracking the somatic experiencing and forming relationship with it. So where IFS is being with parts, the parts might be more cognitive, you know, like how I feel. And they are working to build in more somatics. I've seen that IFS is looking to build that in. Inner relationship focusing doesn't need to build it in because it starts there. It starts with the somatic experience, with the felt sense that you have around anything and everything that occurs in your life.
Yeah. So I'm just thinking if, let's say, for example, you know, I'm going about my day and something happens, a trigger, and I suddenly feel a flutter or a sense of a little bit of anxiety happening. How would inner focusing or somatic inner focusing, what you're talking about, how would you see that as a part, or what would you do with that? Where do you begin with that?
That would be perfect, right? So I would say to you something like, yeah, you were going about your day and then suddenly you sensed something in you that was feeling anxious. Can you feel that right now? How you experience that in your body right now? And then you might let me know. And so rather than turning towards the situation made me anxious, it's what are you sensing in your body? And then tracking that as though your body is the part, as though your body is having the, I'm sensing in my body something that's feeling anxious. I'm letting it know I'm here with it. I'm hearing what it's letting me know. And its experience, the body's experience, might be somewhat different than our cognitive experience. It often gets us faster, closer to that really viscerally felt experience. Something in me is so scared, or something in me just doesn't want to have this or that happen. So we're getting beneath the cognitive level a lot faster, and in a way that is undeniable, because it's the experience of your body. It's right there. You're feeling it right now.
Oh, I really like this. And of course, I want to just zoom forward and go, okay, and then how does this relate to childhood? But we can get there. It gives us a good idea of how this part's work is a little bit different. When you said your body is a part, that actually made a lot of sense. Today, we're going to talk actually about a part that shows up a lot that we can relate. And that's like that inner critic part.
That's right. That all of us, I certainly have a lot of inner critics. I think most of us have inner criticism, and it's incredibly painful and can be paralyzing. Many, many people tell me, I can't do anything because of my inner critic. I've had that experience that where my own inner criticism stopped me from doing things that other parts of me really wanted to do. And so I got really interested in inner criticism, in part because of my personal experience. I know I've shared, you know this, but your audience may not. When I was young, I suffered from social anxiety. And this was holding me back because I'm also a teacher, and I've been a teacher for many, many years, in addition to being a psychologist. But I was terrified of speaking, of public speaking, of speaking in front of large groups. And at some point in my life, I was like, I don't want this inner critic limiting me in this way. So I started learning, one, first from one of my mentors, and then later in inner relationship focusing, really took a deep dive into what is inner criticism anyway. This helped me so much. As you know, I now teach big groups of people. I come on
very big,
right? And that it's no longer an issue for me. But because I had the issue, it had me looking at inner critics. And one of the things I learned in inner relationship focusing, you mentioned IFS. IFS also looks at inner critics as protectors. They are trying to protect you. And they're trying to protect you through criticizing you into inaction or not doing things that you find scary. I think of it sometimes like you might have sometimes seen parents who say things to their kids like, you're going to fail because you're not studying. And they're saying it intensely and in a really angry way. But a lot of times we really get that parent is scared. They're scared for their child. And once we get that, we can soften inside. We can be like, I kind of get it. You're scared. That's why you're being so intense and angry. Well, the same thing is true of ourselves. We're trying to scare ourselves into not doing things because we're afraid and we're worried. And once we can get to that, I'm really worried about something, we can soften in our relationship. The inner critic no longer has to feel like a monster who's being so mean to us. It can be something in me is really worried, where I'm hearing something say, you can't do this. This is too much for you, or you're going to fall flat on your face. I'm hearing it say, I'm going to fall flat on my face. I'm getting it's worried about something for me. I'm going to take a moment and turn towards that. So first, and most importantly, really getting that there's a relationship between those inner critics and inner worry. And further, those inner worries and inner critics are often related to old emotional learnings. Old experiences that we've had were designed to learn. We're designed to learn from what we live through in our lives. And those learnings, when they feel threatening, get encoded subcortically, not as a narrative, not as, wasn't that terrible in first grade when your teacher criticized you and humiliated you? Rather, it gets encoded as classrooms are dangerous. Don't talk out, right? And that's more accessible. When something's subcortical, it can come up fast and protective. Mm-hmm. It's a survival strategy. And so a lot of our inner critics are based in actual old emotional learnings based on experiences we've had that get encoded in shorthand of don't do this, dangerous. And so we listen and we're like, oh, it's trying to help me not go through something really terrible. Underneath those emotional learnings, if we slow down, can be updated. Just like we're designed to learn, mm-hmm. to learn things that help us survive, we thankfully are also designed to update. So what was true of you at 5 might not be true of you as an adult, but we actually have to slow down and hear ourselves like, oh, it's letting me know I'm going to fall flat on my face. And then it might be, wait a minute, let me just check into my now body. Let me just slow down. And since the body I'm in now, I maybe even feel something in my body that feels strong or good or solid. And now let me revisit this thing I'm afraid of. And we might get in touch with, I feel like I'm 5 when I'm scared and I feel really little. I'm way too, like for me, I'm way too little to stand in front of a classroom and talk to a few hundred people.
Oh my gosh, yes.
I'm a little kid. But if I can feel my now body, I might feel I'm really excited to have you all know these things that I know. Everyone should know these things. I want everyone to know them. And I might not be scared anymore. And that might make all the difference in updating old emotional learnings.
I'm hearing SE in that.
You're
right
totally
there.
You're totally hearing SE in that. And you're also hearing memory reconsolidation. So Peter Levine, in his book, Trauma and Memory, lays out how our memory is designed to update and his own unique way of approaching that, which is through the body, through that resource body of what's feeling okay in there. Can I feel my now body of what's strong, what's capable, what feels open and present? And that present day experience of myself and now going towards that thing that I'm afraid of or the bad experience I had in the past helps update my memory. Now it might be, you know what? Going in front of a big group of people doesn't have to be scary. If I look around, wow, they look interested. They look nice. That person's smiling. I might see things way differently. Now my body, mind, being updates. And the more I do that, it might update a little bit and then a little bit more later. And pretty soon it's like that experience isn't particularly scary. It was for me when I was in first grade or kindergarten or, you know, some point in my life. Even that wasn't the driving force. The driving force was the emotional learning. That was a survival strategy that said, don't go in classrooms. They're scary and dangerous and bad things happen. And that's what needed to be updated. We all have hundreds, thousands of emotional learnings designed to save our lives. And some of them are still true. Like, yeah, don't walk into a burning building unless you're a firefighter who's trained. The ones that are still survival strategies that we need that are going to save our lives, we want to keep those. But the ones that are really trying to save our lives from something we no longer need our lives saved for, we want those to update.
I just love all of that you're saying and the updating. I mean, we all want to update. It's so interesting how in the past we thought we could just update by thinking differently or saying something differently. And then, okay, then we're ready to go and speak.
Right.
But you talked about the nervous system or the imprinting of that survival strategy that is reflexive. That's happened so quickly because it's trying to help us and save us. You talked about slowing it down. So I want to hear more about that.
I've been talking about Hormone Harmony by Happy Mammoth, the supplement that helps women maintain optimal hormone levels, with over 50,000 glowing reviews from women worldwide and 98% saying they'd recommend it to friends and family. Now you can take those results even further by pairing it with their prebiotic collagen protein, which helps restore gut lining integrity, promoting overall hormonal balance. It helps to relieve occasional bloating and gas, reduce sugar cravings, and help you feel satisfied longer, support healthy, sustainable weight management, boost energy, and help stabilize mood swings. Because your gut directly affects your hormones, improving gut health can amplify your hormone harmony results so you can feel like yourself again. Happy Mammoth is dedicated to making women's lives easier, and that means only science-backed ingredients that have been proven to work for women. They make no compromise when it comes to quality, and it shows. Right now, you can try prebiotic collagen protein and hormone harmony risk-free and get 15% off your entire first order with code HEALING at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code HEALING for 15% off today.
Look, if you're still buying weed from some guy named Trevor in a parking lot, you're doing it wrong. Mood.com delivers legal THC products straight to your door. Gummies, vapes, flower, the good stuff. No sketchy DMs, no med card. Just add to cart, check out, and boom, it's at your doorstep. It's legal in all 50 states, thanks to the Farm Bill, and Mood's products actually work. Seriously, this isn't gas station garbage. It's small batch, lab-tested, real results. Go to Mood.com, use code FIRST20 for 20% off, and never run dry again. That's Mood.com. Go get lit, legally.
Talk to us more about that.
Absolutely. So the subcortical strategies are designed to be fast. So that, let's say a bus is coming and I need to jump out of the way. We don't want to wait for my cortex to say, oh yeah, bus, dangerous, maybe I should run. Like, we want it to be quick. If we slow it down, and hopefully in a safe enough, like a relatively safe environment, one of the things that Peter Levine has us do as we begin work is often to just take a look around. Look around, do like a 180 or a 360, really taking in slowly the room or space you're sitting in, because we're designed to evaluate our environments and to notice, ooh, looking pretty scary there, or there's actually nothing going on here. It's just me in my office. And so as we slow down, we're designed to take in what's there. And then our parasympathetic nervous system might be like, nothing going on. Feel free to settle, just settle. And then as we settle, let's say we then recall, I want to work with this memory of teaching in front of a really big group that happened 3 years ago. It was so scary, terrible things happened. Then it might be, we're going to recall it from now slowly while sitting in this really safe space. And as we do that, let's check in. And notice what's feeling safe in my body right now. Let me stay connected to that. Okay. And now let me recall the very beginning. What's the first thing that let me know that this experience was off or scary? You know what? I felt the most scared actually before I ever arrived, before I ever spoke. Okay, let's notice what you feel in your body. And you're going to go through the whole experience, noticing what you feel in your body now about every scary point of the memory. And from that's a somatic experiencing approach. From an inner relationship focusing approach, we're going to add the relationship to what happens. Something in me, not I'm really scared or I'm really contracted. Something in me is really tightening up. I can feel it here in my chest. Wow. When I sense into that, it is so scared. So we start using parts-based language and relating to it from a self experience, the me that can be with whatever arises within me, with interest and curiosity and compassion. And I can be like, wow, feel that contraction. Then we're back to the somatic experiencing. We are where we are deeply interested in contractions and expansions, which is part of how we regulate our nervous system. And something's too much for us or scary or it's a survival-based thing. We might contract. Let me try to deal with this from this little space. You know, let me tighten up, brace. And when we feel relatively safe, our muscles might ease and we might feel like, oh, I feel really good. This is really comfortable. So as we're in the safe space, our muscles ease. We feel more relaxed. And then as we recall the scary thing, we start to feel the tightening inside. We start to relate to the tightening from the feeling okay. I'm starting to update. Something in me is scared. Not all of me, just part of me. Something in me is really scared. I'm letting it know I get how scared it is. It's letting me know it's really afraid of being humiliated, falling flat on my face, making mistakes. So the inner critic starts coming up. It's letting me know what it's afraid of, and it's often very specific. It doesn't want me to fall flat on my face. Oh, okay, now I get it. It doesn't want embarrassment or humiliation or shame. And so from combining the somatic experiencing knowledge of the nervous system with the inner relationship focusing somatic parts work model, where we build a relationship, it kind of doubles the transformational ability of the model, possibility of updating all those old emotional learnings that are no longer serving us.
That is so fascinating. And is this something that a person can learn to do themselves, or they have to work with someone? Like, tell us a bit about that.
Absolutely. You can absolutely learn about this. You can get a good start on your own. I have a workbook that I'm going to give you a link for that can get you started with some guided visualizations and some knowing. And most of us need that. That's a good start. And most of us need a little more than that. So sometimes working with a person who knows inner relationship focusing, somatic inner relationship focusing is really helpful, because it's really easy for us. You know, I've written about how people will say things to me like, my inner critic just tells me true things about me. And so we believe it. We intensely identify with the flaws and problems that the inner critic is telling us about. Because of that, working with another person or taking a class where you're doing exercises can be extremely helpful, because the person sitting across from you is more likely to be able to get, you know, that is a critic that's predicting doom for you, and that it's a critic. And where we, you know, as it's something of our own experience, we might be like, right, it's telling me about something that's going to happen in the future. I'm always going to fail. That's about the future. I don't really know that. It certainly feels true. And so having someone sitting across from us or taking a class where we're doing partnered exercises can have us slow down enough, remember to sense back into our bodies regularly, look around every once in a while and really see your current environment, allows us to also have, like, move out of contraction. Inner critics often have both a contraction and kind of like a freezy state sitting on top of them, like feeling ashamed, like, you know, or bad feeling. And that as we slow it down, we might experience a tiny bit of expansion in our system, which might make some of the statements and self-attributions that the inner critic is saying feel like, oh, right, I don't actually know if that's true. I don't know if that's true now. I don't know if that's ever going to be true. It's actually about the future or what it's worried about. And it starts to lose some of its credibility and power. We no longer feel like this is 100% true. I'm an imposter. I'm, you know, there's no way I'm going to be successful. We don't have to stay in that small place anymore. We're no longer having to operate from that, you know, deep survival-based strategy.
What I really love about what you've talked about so far is just getting to the intention. I think we always think the intention is probably evil of the critic.
Yeah.
And just talking about that, it's really trying to help us and protect us. It's actually a loving response,
yes.
Not in such a great way, but it's trying to help us. That really changes a lot. And then the way that you were talking when you said, something in me.
Yeah.
I don't know. That created a separation from that part that feels either attacked or fearful. And I really like that.
Yeah. Two incredibly important things that we really get, that it's not all of us. It's something in us. And it may sound really mean. Inner critics can sound terribly mean and cruel and awful. And we might not like them. And we might be like, oh, that's really not a very good. If you heard that conversation outside, you'd be like, what is going on? That's a terrible relationship. And it's true. It is a terrible relationship. It's a terrible relationship we're having with ourselves, and one that deeply benefits from
a different kind of relationship. And once we're with the inner critic and really sensing what it's worried about, we might begin to sense it's afraid for us. It is exhausted by trying to take care of us all the time. And like you said, like it's transformational to really get. It's a part of us that's trying to take care of us, often based on something we lived through, sometimes years and years, decades ago, and has developed emotional learnings designed to help us survive that actually, as you said, don't actually serve us. But it's a big, big shift.
Yeah, it's a huge shift. I mean, even hearing you explain it at the beginning, even if people just got that.
Yes.
It's amazing.
I agree. Even if you just get that, it will change the way you experience yourself. It'll change the way you experience other people too. So now when they are criticizing you, you might be able to sit back a little and say, that's one, first of all, that is not all of them. It's a part of them, which makes it more bearable. Let's say it's a loved one, someone you're really deeply attached to, and they're criticizing you. That can feel pretty bad. And if you recognize that's a part of them that's worried about me, it's more bearable. Forming a relationship with parts of you that are more healthy relationships, and for experiencing your relationships with other people differently, people you're attached to in particular. You know, it's different, like someone you don't even know. But with someone you're attached to, it can be really, really hurtful when they criticize you.
Yeah. But again, seeing it from they're trying to protect you, but that's, again, that slowing it down. Usually we just react so fast and there's no slowing down.
Exactly. We're usually like, you're criticizing me and that's painful. But if we slow down and get that person is worried about me, it feels very, very different. And we might not have to be reactive. We might be able to have a really different conversation.
Maureen, you talked about adding the attachment component to this work. What do you mean by that?
Well, as I was saying, like part of the problem here is our relationship to ourselves. You know, I said something like, if someone else heard this conversation that we were having with ourselves, you're such a loser, you're so pathetic. We'd be like, wow, that is a crappy relationship. And if it was our friend, we'd be like, you know, that person is really doesn't treat you well. We would be concerned for our friend. And yet we don't think it's unusual to treat ourselves this way at all. And so part of working with inner critics is the recognition that we literally in those areas have an insecure attachment to ourselves. You know, Bowlby, in his original theory of attachment, talked about the internal working model of others, how I see you, you're really mean, or you are really loving, or you are really kind. The internal working model of self. And that internal working model of self might include things like, you are completely unlovable. You are so flawed. It starts getting to be a very insecure relationship. Maybe it's an anxious relationship. Or a dismissive relationship. Would you just stop, you know, just get over it? We might start being dismissive towards our own states, our own feelings. So in inner relationship focusing, we're looking to develop a more positive relationship to the self. I, from self and presence, can be with whatever arises within me, with interest, with curiosity, with compassion. Now I'm setting the stage for a more secure attachment. That internal working model becomes more secure. And that easing I was talking about in your body, that as your inner environment becomes safer, you start to ease. Less bracing, less contraction, more ease. The neuroceptive experience of safety increases. I feel safer inside because I'm no longer living in a war zone filled with criticism, where I'm being constantly attacked. Now I'm in a place where maybe something occurs and I'm like, oh, something in me is really nervous. Something in me is really anxious, and I can turn toward that. It's a more compassionate relationship.
That's what I was just going to say. This is self-compassion work. It's beautiful.
Yes. And if you do enough self-compassion work, you change your internal environment to one that, because neuroception involves how you take in your outer world and your inner world, an assessment of inner and outer safety. So your neuroceptive experience is going to start becoming more easeful and inviting experience you to allow experiences of pleasure and joy because you're safer. When you don't feel safe, pleasure and joy are not on the menu. Safe enough.
Exactly. I remember where when I was younger and people would be planning things for the future. I was just trying to focus on today or on the moment. So even as you ease up, you can make plans and what you want to do and those kinds of things.
Absolutely. You're really the inner and the outer. It's what I love about bringing together somatic experiencing, which is such a powerful model of noticing and working with the nervous system, and the beautiful addition by Ann Weiser Cornell and Barbara McGavin of let's have a relationship with what we're experiencing inside.
I love this.
There's another class I teach that I love on self-sabotage. And right, because so many of us, like we want to do something, we don't do it. So that class is focused on noticing if we keep wanting to do something and we keep not doing it, something in us doesn't want to do it. And the something in us that doesn't want to do it is often also based on old emotional learnings. So inner critics and inner saboteurs kind of, they're like cousins. They're both trying to save us from things we want. When we can shift our relationship to those things, one, we're updating the old emotional learnings, and we don't need to live in this fearful place as often. You know, fear is designed to save our lives. We need fear, but we don't need fear about, like for me, I don't need fear about teaching groups of people. I don't need that fear. That's not saving my life at all. It's keeping me from doing things that I want to do. And so when I can update my safety, my neuroceptive experience of safety in a classroom, now I can do that.
So great. I'm going to leave your information
in
the show notes.
Yes, absolutely. Just to let people know, I'm going to be starting a new class on working with inner critics. And for your listeners, offering this $50 discount for taking the class. And I hope some people are interested enough to come and take the class.
I did some training in inner focusing and I really, really enjoyed it. So this is great to have some inner focusing, some somatic experiencing. Thanks for being with us, Maureen.
Wonderful to see you again.